All right, so let's go ahead and get started. I think Dave Lane will join in later. I'll go ahead and scribe since I'm up. Our agenda is here. Let me go ahead and scribe. Okay, on the agenda today is issue 76, use of null in JSON-LD, defining how empty arrays are handled, removing the initial context from the specs, and then reviewing the container list decision. Anything else that we should put on the agenda that's higher priority or that we need to discuss this week?
I got a question from, let's see if I can quote it, sorry. It was regarding issue 44, which we resolved using containers set in framing.
Mm-hmm.
And both, actually, I realized that Josh Mandel asked me if the consequence then was that this did not have any effect in compaction.
Yeah, and I think the consensus we had is the only place it has that type of effect is in framing, right?
Yeah, I think,
that's part of what we're discussing with container list, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that both container set and container list and compaction might need some thinking. Possibly.
Okay.
But I'm not sure we should push this forward on the agenda though, because I asked Josh if he was to comment on it, and if he doesn't, I will do something about it on that issue or in another issue. So basically, it might be possible to, without creating any of the concerns you had about things not validating properly, it might be useful to support these constructs in compaction to ensure that even when there is only one item, that item will be put into a JSON array if the container
right.
is either list or set.
Right, right.
But I think to the first issue, I think it's 84, it's related to the first one, which Nicholas raised some time ago.
Use of null, yeah.
Okay, so that's on the, well, actually, no, that's not on the agenda. 83 is on the agenda.
It's not on the agenda, but it's quite closely related to the first item on the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we can have that in mind.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay, so we're not moving anything around on the agenda, just raising the issue, right, Nicholas?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, anything? Oh, I had something. There have been two reviews of JSON-LD, one by Oracle and the other by W3C staff, but they were sent to me personally. I should take those and send them on to the mailing list, and we should open up a bunch of issues if there are any. And really, there weren't any issues. They seem to be fairly happy with it, which is good news, because usually when this stuff comes back, it's riddled with issue markers all over the document. But they seem to be fairly they've had really more questions on how to use JSON-LD to achieve some of what they were doing, and from if my memory serves, JSON-LD already supported a lot of what they did.
Awesome.
Okay, first up, issue 76, use of null in JSON-LD. I tried to go into this issue and kind of summarize all of the things that I thought we were talking about. So if you go to the link at the very bottom of the issue, at the very bottom, and I guess Marcus, I haven't seen what you wrote, but at the very bottom of the issue, I basically outlined that there are two ways null could be used in JSON-LD in the context and the body of the document. I think the last time we discussed this, we talked about what happens when it can be in the what happens when null is found in the body of the document. Basically, the JSON-LD processor ignores the key value pair, right? But if it's found in the context, then effectively it clears whatever value it's set for. So let me go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and dump all of this into the IRC channel just to help in describing. So there's there's effectively that stuff. So when null is used beside the context, it's used to clear the active context. If it's used with a prefix or a term, it's used to clear the prefix of the term. If it's used with a data type, it's used to clear the data type. If it's used with language, it clears the language. And if it uses, it's used with the container type association, then it clears the container type. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yes, I believe that the last three mean the same thing as if you just define the term without the type, language, and container, correct? Because
Not entirely. Let's see. Actually, I think no. I think you're right. I think you're right. It would be the same.
Yeah.
Because if I defined it, if I had previously defined term, and then I define it without any of those things, it would clear those meanings as well. I believe.
Yeah, we read. There is no partial redefinition of a term.
Yeah, it's always full.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember what decision we made on that, but it sounds like all of us agree that that's the decision we made.
Yes,
okay,
I am.
That sounds
quite
good.
Right. I wonder, though, if language should actually mean something there, because I haven't seen it used in the context before.
We use language to set the default language. Actually, you know what?
Now, language is not a part of
the
term definition.
Yeah, but it is in the context, right? We do use
it
in the context, but yeah, I actually didn't think about that when I wrote that.
But that's interesting, on the other hand, because that might imply that it could be useful to either, for some reason, say, like, wanting a key, like, two keys like this, that might be something someone wants to define.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you use language null, it's almost the same as type string. You know, it creates a plain literal with no language.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we create an issue and we can get to that sometime
yes.
in the future.
Yeah.
Who's creating the issue?
They can do that.
Thank you, Marcus.
Sorry.
Thank you, Nicholas.
For some reason, people, very much alike.
Yeah, I think over the phone, at least, 8 kilohertz. I'm sure if we had a higher quality audio link, it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, but we all know it. It's kind of funny.
Well, Austrians and Swedes, you know, they're so close together.
Yeah. Let's see, ID null. I'm reading Marcus's comment on issue 76. Marcus, did you want to do a quick overview of that?
Yeah, well, basically I just added I think, three cases which you didn't have in your list. One is ID equals null, so either in the context or in the body. And the other one is in the extended form, so if you had at value and set that to null, but the language tag or the type there is still set to something meaningful. And finally, what happens if at list or at set is set to null? So is that an empty list, or is it just removed as any other term with a value as null?
At set is not used in the body, as I recall. It's only used in the context.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we, well, we should maybe discuss that as well, but that's another issue.
Okay.
So, my opinion is that at ID null probably does relate to issue 2084 that I'm not quite conversant enough on yet, but I would think that that would basically cause the object that contains that to be, in the case of the body, the object to be ignored. In the case of a context, yes, I think it would be equivalent to saying term null.
So it would remove the whole declaration of that term.
In the context, it would be equivalent to saying term null. If you said you had a term, you gave it an object form that had an ID of null, you would be saying there was no mapping for that term, and that would be equivalent to saying term null.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Right. So
within the body, if you're going to use an ID null, then it would make sense that that object has no definition, although I'm not sure what it would say about the things underneath of that object.
So I differ slightly on that. So if you use it in the body, ID null, I think that's the same as not specifying an ID at all. But that doesn't mean that the entire object disappears. Does that make sense? So if you have, you know, ID colon null, and then you have fof name, you know, Greg Kellogg, then what would end up being created is a B node, not ignoring that entire object. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
I agree with that. I'd interpret it like that. Also, as Marcus initially said, here comes issue 84 in the outskirts, so to speak. If you use ID null for a term, we have an open question whether that term would be possible to use in some way in issue 84. We don't have to resolve it now, but it's to provide context to the effect.
Okay. All right. So I think at least that was a discussion on ID null, both in the context and the body. So what happens when you have value null and language DE? I think we, Marcus, I think we'd end up discarding the entire, if the value is null, we discard everything else, I think.
Yeah, that would be my interpretation as well. So the whole object plus the value holding that object.
Yeah.
The key holding that object, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so...
And the same would apply, in my opinion, for at least null. So we discard everything.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I mean, I think that's consistent. So anytime you have a key value pair in the body of the document, you act as if that key value pair, and it's the key value pair where the value is null, you act as if the key value pair was never declared. The JSON LD processor acts like it was never declared. If you have it up in the context, it actively, it just clears whatever it's associated with. So if it's associated with a type, it clears it. If it's associated with a language, it clears it. If it's associated with a container, it clears it. If it's associated with a term, clears it. And same thing with context. If it's associated with a context, it clears it. And I think that's nice. And
That's slightly different, right? If to say it doesn't exist in the case of context isn't the same, because if it didn't exist, then you would continue to inherit previous contexts. In the case of the context, it's saying explicitly clear out any active context.
But isn't that the same for term declarations? Wouldn't you kind of
delete the previously defined
one?
Yeah, that's what it. So in the context, it means clear out previous definitions. In the body, it means act as if it did not appear.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. In general, when null is used in the context of a, let's see, in general, when null is used in the context, in general, when null is used in the context, it clears the current definition of the value that it...
So one quibble on that. If we say, unless otherwise specified, it's a little less wishy-washy.
Sure. Unless otherwise specified... When null is used in the context, it clears the current definition, or I guess it clears the, how could we word that generally? It clears the JSON-LD keyword associated with it.
It removes any definition associated with the key in which it's used.
But it is associated with. It removes any definition.
Of course, that's a dangling participle.
Yeah. It removes any definition associated with the key? With the keyword?
Yes. With the key, right?
Yeah, unless otherwise specified, when null is used in the context, it removes any definition associated with the key.
Actually,
from the active context?
It's used as a value in the context, I think, because I don't believe we're introducing using null as a... You can't use null as a key. But,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
Maybe it's redundant. Yeah.
So what's the rewording? It removes any definition associated with the key?
Yeah.
Or... Okay. And should we say from within the active context? From the active context. And there's a little issue there, which means what happens when you set context to null. But I think the minutes kind of capture what we mean by that.
Yeah, but that is the unless otherwise specified part, right? So we then will explicitly specify setting a context to null clears the active context.
Okay, so unless otherwise specified, when null is used in the context, it removes any definition associated with the key. Okay, so that is resolved. And then the next proposal is when null is used, well, I guess when context is set to null, then the active context is cleared of all definitions. So when the context is set to null, then the active context is cleared of all definitions. And this has two forms, one of them when it's just context null, and the other one when it's context colon, and there's a null in the array of context associations.
Yeah, that's actually related to issue 80, remove initial context. So either we clear the context or we set it to the initial context.
Right. So that's
right.
Yeah. So I think we can still keep this issue fairly clean. When we get to that, we'll discuss it. But I guess when we say clear the active context, we mean set it to the initial context if there is going to exist initial context.
Okay.
This might be why it's useful to keep around the term initial context. Then it's clear. We set it to the initial context. If we explicitly define the initial context to be empty, then that's what happens. Otherwise, clear might imply that if there was an initial context, it would clear the initial context.
We could also just say it resets the context, the active context.
Resets to... Yeah.
Well, I guess so. How many people on the call feel like we should have an initial context? I know I think we should have an initial context, even if it's null. So I agree with Greg.
Yeah.
What's the point of having an initial context that it's null? That it's null.
Because it allows us to expand it in the future and have a fairly I might not be in favor of having a null initial context. I might want there to be XSD and RDF in there, or just some basic set of items in there. In fact, we might even go as far as saying that we should have the RDFA initial context in there, but I think that might be going too far.
We want to explicitly bind it to RDFA, but I basically agree that it should have some term definitions and things such as that.
I agree.
The problem, as we have it now, for example, is that you would be allowed to override those definitions, for example, in another context. Whereas
why wouldn't you?
You can't do that if that knowledge is hard-coded, for example.
It's not hard-coded. It's an initial context when you can override it subsequently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, does it make sense that someone can override at type, for example? I don't think so. That shouldn't be allowed.
Well, but you can't you, through the keyword aliasing mechanism? What do you mean by override type?
Well, if we rely that at type is, for example, cursed to a IRI by using the initial context, then anyone can override that. If we require that the processor has that knowledge hard-coded, no one can override it. That's what I mean.
Oh, I just don't see a problem with that. Someone could do that, and then they would get some nonsense out of it, but we would all treat it equivalently, and I think that's the key. The advantage of doing that, I think, leads to much more uniformity, and I don't have as many special cases in my processor where I have to hard code the type, takes an ID, for instance, because it just falls out of the implementation if it's defined in the initial context.
Well, but all other keywords are kind of hard-coded. It's just type, if I'm not completely wrong now.
Well, ID. ID.
Yeah, well, ID is a special case.
Yeah, if you're to override ID saying that it didn't take an ID, I don't know if that might
like
happen.
That's like a self-referencing definition.
It is.
You say that ID
curses
to ID, so what does that mean?
But I think my processor, if I saw a context definition for type that said that its type was something other than ID, would do that. And it would seem odd that we would do anything, that we would not obey such a command.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas, you're on the queue.
Yeah. I think that ID is it has a very intricate meaning, just like value and type when it's used as data type, but type when it's used as RDF type, in my view, is could be defined in the initial context, and it's basically a it's a special case. I mean, it's an alias for RDF type, and there are a couple of cases which we should probably raise an issue about type, because for one, I think that it was Josh who asked if now that we have container set support, if you could define type to always be of container set if you want to, because he had cases where he always wanted a list of types, even if it's just one type. Because certain uses of RDF uses lots of multiple types for one object. And the other case is if you, for some reason, don't want type RDF types to be have queries ID on them, which we implicitly have now, you might want to have just a plain object with an ID with the URI for the type, and perhaps something else there, like the label for the type or what it is a subtype of. There are certain use cases which might warrant this. And that would mean that you might want to define, if you define some term for type, RDF type, which is not at type, that might even... it might be good to actually clear the default type definition somehow. Well, you can set type to null explicitly, and that would do it. So I think that type should be a part of the default context, actually.
But that would change JSON-LD completely. Like, if you would allow objects with IDs as values for at type and stuff like that. And I'm not sure if we should really go in that direction.
I don't see how you mean. I mean, if we don't, we can't support all of RDF.
I agree with Marcus. I'm not quite following you, Nicholas, on how we would change. I mean, I think we could specify that type takes an ID or type is of a type is of type RDF type. No, that's not right.
No.
I guess the predicate for type is RDF type.
Type is a special case, just as IDs, for example.
Yeah.
Type is special because we've overloaded its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we have all our keywords have kind of an overloaded meaning. You can't
mm-hmm.
represent that in an initial context.
Okay, so let's rewind.
Someone has to be able to use something like that in order to take control of the link relation RDF type, which in RDFA is just any other predicate.
I don't understand that, to be honest. You have...
Okay.
Is that a context definition or is that in the document?
That's in a context definition.
Mm-hmm.
And currently in the context definition, we have a meaning which is... this is what I think is the implicit default definition.
Yes.
Granted that the overloading of keyword meanings make this kind of hard to parse for the mind.
In the first case, why would you need to reset at type to null? It could just stay there. It wouldn't change anything.
If I don't reset it, I'm not sure what a compaction algorithm would do with my type triples. If I reset it to null, I know that type won't be used in my document data. during compaction.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we would have to make a special case for type, saying that if there is no definition, any term which has an ID of RDF type, then use at type. And that would complicate things. But if we allow people to just reset at type and then use their own term for the generic link relation handling, in which RDF type would just take be a part, we wouldn't be in the clear. I think that's the simpler solution.
Okay. All right. So let's rewind back a bit. We've had we do have an issue on this, so we'll get to it.
Yes.
What I was trying to find out is what the wording of the proposal should be. So maybe what we should do is the proposal. See, so this is talking about whether or not what happens when you set null context to null.
Right.
If context is set to null, then the active context is cleared or set to the initial context, depending on the resolution to issue. Which issue is that?
It's 80.
Issue 80. Okay. Does that proposal look good? And then Nicholas, plus one, minus one.
Sorry. Sounds good. I'm not entirely sure if it should go back to the initial or nuke it. I think it should go back. So.
Right. Well, I guess what to clarify what we were saying is, if we decide that there is an initial context, it should go back to the initial context. If we decide that there should not be an initial context, then it should mute it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that it should fall back. Probably it should, so, well, do it like that.
Okay, so that's resolved. I think that's that issue, right?
We still have to resolve what happens in the body, right?
You're right. Okay. Proposal, if null is associated with a key in the body of a JSON document, then the JSON LD processor must act as if the key value pair was never defined, never declared.
Do you want to add something for the extended form, like at value?
In expanded form, well, let's see. If value or list is, I say, is value or list is set to null in expanded form, then the entire object is ignored. The entire JSON object is ignored. Is that right? I think that's right.
Yeah.
All right, that's resolved. Okay, I think that's the end of that issue.
I'll update the issue.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
I've done that already.
You already did?
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Awesome. Thank you, Marcus. All right, next issue up is define how empty arrays are handled, issue 79.
Sorry, just to go back a sec. Did we define what we do with ID null, or do we do that as part of issue 84?
No, I think that that last bit said it. It's as acts as if it was not there at all.
Yeah.
Until we reach issue 84 and see if we want to keep that.
Yeah.
In all cases, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it extends on that basic assumption. So an ID null in itself would make the term meaningless, but possibly using something like perhaps container or alias graph would have some meaning.
Right.
Again.
I think that last resolution probably should be amended to say unless otherwise specified, which will give us some wiggle room if we get to a different meaning for it.
True.
Okay.
ID null is just for the context, not for the body, right?
Okay, so unless otherwise specified, if null is associated with an... So that...
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so issue 79 is what do we do when there are empty arrays in the document? Specifically, how are they handled during compaction? Is that what this issue is about? In round tripping.
So yes, and last time we talked about this, I misspoke when I claimed that they were removed during compaction. It would be during normalization that they'd be removed in framing, not compaction, the way things are written today.
Okay, so... arrays should be removed from normalization if they are not a set or list, and empty arrays. Is that right? Empty arrays should be removed from normalization if they're not a set or a list?
So how do we maintain it if it's a set? Because so presuming that normalization basically goes to triples, there is no way in triples to specify an empty array.
Yeah, and I guess then it's removed, if that means.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because there's no representation for it.
And I think that's fine if the purpose of normalizing is to frame. Actually, what would happen then? There would be no definition for that at all, so you wouldn't... If there was a set definition for a term, it wouldn't actually get recreated as a set. It just wouldn't be there at all.
True.
If framing, if in the frame you specify that term, then it would create a definition, wouldn't it? Yeah. So,
yeah,
so I think that's okay.
Okay, so are these two proposals? I looked at the proposals you put in there, Greg, and they seemed a bit off. So there are two proposals in there. One of them is if an empty array is used as a value, if an empty array used as a value is not subject to list coercion, then the value must be removed from normalized output. Is that right? What you have in there is must be removed from compacted output.
Yeah, so I tried to amend that, my comment down there where I said I misspoke. It wasn't compaction, it was normalization that I had been referring to.
Okay. So. All right, so the proposal is if an empty array used as a value is not subject to list coercion, then the value must be removed from normalized output.
Right.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
But it must be preserved for compacted and expanded output.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we'll do a second proposal right after this to ensure that that happens. Must be actually, well, I can make it a part of the same. Let's see, so if an empty array is used, so if an empty array is not subject to list coercion, then it is preserved in expanded and compacted output.
I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe the compaction and expansion algorithms don't attempt to change the structure of the document.
Okay. Must be. If an empty array used as a value is not subject to list coercion, then the value must be removed from normalized output. The empty array must be preserved in compacted and expanded output. Okay, so that is resolved. Okay, and then the next thing up is if an empty array is used as a value is subject to list coercion, then the value must be preserved in normalized output, and then the empty array must be preserved in compact and then expanded output.
Do we have a problem there with set coercion?
So you're saying set, if we
I'm
do
asking.
Set...
I'm not saying anything, I'm asking.
I think we should probably preserve it. If it's a list or a set, it should probably be preserved, right? Well...
So then, Gaston, how would you preserve a set, unless we invent a triple pattern that basically says there's nothing here, like for instance, the closest thing in RDF is RDF null, but RDF null means an empty list.
Yeah, well, you have all nothing as well, or an instance thereof, perhaps. But
yes, but then how would you specify the triple where the value was all nothing?
Oh,
as a resource.
I wouldn't. It's you can't. But if I wanted to attempt, I would probably use all nothing directly, or even a B node with the type all nothing, although that makes even less sense logically. But do we need to do that in?
I would lean against not supporting it right now, just because I don't think we really have a use case for it.
And it's incompatible with RDF.
Yeah. I mean, you're right, Greg. We could create a new construct, but then we'd create a new construct, and who would use it?
I think we might.
The problem is, if triples is really what this gets down to, then you have the problem that if you invent an object that means an empty array, then you can't also represent the JSON LD where that representation is meant as a value versus as a placeholder for an empty array.
Right.
And I see no compelling reason to preserve set in through normalization anyway.
No. I mean, if we used notation 3, which we can't because that's an extension, but if we did, we could use an existential variable for that and say that there's possibly something here, preserve the intent.
Yes, but now what you're doing, though, is you're defining it in terms of some syntactic model rather than than a sort of a semantic model.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that I don't want to go there, but that's if I wanted to glean some kind of information for something which is a set and where the value is an empty JSON array, that would possibly be the only information I would be able to glean from that. But I'd rather glean nothing.
So, like, from another point of view, is an empty set different from an empty list?
Yes.
Yes.
No, I mean, like, not in RDF, like, from a developer's point of view who is using JSON-LD.
I think, so you have two classes of developers, those that know RDF and those that don't. I think the people that know RDF would see some minor distinction between the two, but I think the vast majority of the developer public would not.
Yeah.
So I would argue that
we do both the same way. So either we preserve both or we discard both.
I just don't see any way using the graph model to preserve that. And I think from a developer's point of view, they're going to be saying, how do I get this? I need to have an array representation, whether there's anything or not. And there will be a way to do it through framing, because framing is the toolkit by which a developer gets the data in the form they want. And we provide a way to do that.
Yeah, a structured syntax to operate on.
Exactly.
And when you do normalization, compaction, expansion, any of those operations transforms that structure, and anyone should know what these algorithms do on a semantic level to be able to expect the outcome of them.
But all of that applies to lists as well, so why should lists be different in that respect?
Well, saying that there is a list, for instance, Santa Claus makes a list and checks it twice. It might be that no one ever gets on the list, and he's verified that, yep, the list is empty. Yeah. That means something.
Yeah, but also an empty set means something.
Not in the term we use it here, a set of triples. An empty set of triples is nothing.
The thing is, we have a graph model. JSON-LD is a way to represent graphs in JSON. That is one of the limitations of graphs, is they can't represent the absence of information.
I wouldn't generalize that. Because that's exactly the same as an empty list. It's just that RDF doesn't have any support for that. So there is no RDF nil for sets.
Well, it's because lists are represented as linked lists, so it provides a way to do that. Linked lists are always going to be terminated. Sets, the only way to do it would be to construct some meta node, which perhaps this would be the only, a vertex that had some meaning outside of it was not a resource, it was some other representation. And I think this would be the only thing within the graph model for which we'd need to do that.
Oh, okay, so let's go at this from another direction. Marcus, are you saying that, well, this is all fine and good, but a developer is going to be confused, a developer that doesn't really know anything about RDF is going to be confused when lists are effectively compacted to array form and sets are not? I think that's what I'm most concerned about, is what is a developer that doesn't really know anything about RDF going to think when a list is compacted to, open, close array, but a set is not.
Well, I think it requires a parenthetical within the spec that describes why that's the case.
So we seem to be very hung up on the round-tripping issue, And maybe this, if we put that to the side and say there's no way that you can round trip a set through normalization, that's fine. But if we talk about how set is treated in expansion and compaction, that might be a different discussion, right? We could say
right.
that, hey, well, if it's a set, then it's, you know, it gets, if someone specifies that it's a set, then let's just use an open square bracket empty array. We don't care about the round tripping case, but we do care about not confusing beginner developers.
I can see the point in that. In the same way as we've discussed preserving plain old JSON pieces.
Greg, so that's good. Nicholas, Greg, do you have kind of thoughts on that? If we're basically saying, look, we can't round trip a set, but we could preserve it and compact and expand to help.
No, I'm completely fine with preserving it through compaction and expansion.
Okay.
And in fact, I think that's the normal thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only time we affect the structure really is for lists, right, where we'll remove the object notation of a list and represent it as an array. If I don't think normally we screw with the document structure through expansion and compaction otherwise.
Right. I guess if it was a set, would we do that?
If it's coerced to set, and you have something that's represented as a string, when you expand, well, expansion's always going to take the string literal and turn it into an object representation.
Mm-hmm.
Compaction, when you compact something that's a string, where it's coerced to a set, then I think it would change it to an array form.
Yes, I think that would be good.
Okay, and then for expansion, we would change to array form as well. For an object, it would expand out, and the string would expand out into the object, and then that would be placed in an array for expansion. If the thing was a set, container set,
you know, that's pretty weird, because when you expand, you're going to remove the context that claimed that it was in a set.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd expect it to actually lose the array then, because if you expand the already expanded form, it would. Right?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But right now, if I had something that was represented as an array with a single element, when I expanded it, it would continue to be represented as an array within a single element. Because I don't believe expansion tries to do that kind of optimization.
Okay.
It might be that expansion needs to uniformly represent values as single element arrays if they were singular.
Yeah. I've heard some questions about that. That would make it more, a bit more like RDF-JSON also, which always uses that form.
That probably would simplify the compaction thing, because you would always know that the form of values was going to be an array. You wouldn't have to special case it.
Okay, so sorry. Could you summarize what you just said again, Greg, just to make sure I get it in
there? So the idea would be when the general expansion algorithm, when expanding values that are not in array form, would put them into an array form.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we compact, we always can count on the fact that values are in array form. Now, it's interesting to note, if we had the case where we had a list coercion, so we had something listed as an array, that we would first expand by turning that array into an object with a list key, and then we would put that inside of an array.
Hmm. So generalizing it that far, I think, may make the data really annoying to work with.
Is it intended that expanded form is intended to be easy to work with?
Not expanded, but compacted is, right? So if everything in compacted form gets turned into an array.
That's not what I said.
Oh, okay.
An expanded form is turned into an array. When we do compaction, now the algorithm can count on the fact that value is going to be always in an array form when they start. And then it will compact that down based upon what the context is used. Because right now, I believe you've got a branch, right? So if the value is an object, if it's a string, if it's an array, you have different branches in that algorithm. But it would always be an array.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good to me. Really normalized.
Yeah, to me as well. And we should add a note to the spec that you lose sets if you're doing normalization. Empty sets.
Yes.
Okay, so we are saying we're actually, these are two separate things. One of them is we're changing expanded form such that all values in expanded form are placed into an array. We are saying that, so that's the first thing. The second thing that we're saying is for values that are coarse to a list or a set, either one, if it has an empty value, so open, close, square bracket, then in compacted form, that is preserved, both for lists and for sets. In expanded form, it's preserved as well, is that right? So open, close, square bracket is preserved in for lists and sets in expanded form?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when you normalize anything that's open, close, square bracket that is not a list is removed.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so first proposal is when normalizing anything that is not coerced to a list container type, when normalizing anything that is not coerced to a list container type, anything that is not coerced to a list container type is removed from the normalized output. Anything that is not coerced to a list container type that has a value of open close square bracket has an empty array for its value. Okay, so when normalizing anything that is not coerced to a list container type that has an empty array for its value is removed from the normalized output. Okay. And the next proposal is when compacting and expanding anything that is coerced to a set or a list container type that has an empty array for its value is preserved in the compacted and expanded outputs. Okay, and then the next proposal is, what is the next proposal? Anything that's, what did it have to do with? I'm drawing a complete blank.
I think that's it. We just said we had a note about that losing, about losing the empty set in normalization.
Yeah, I thought that it was something else. Normalizing anything. This has to do with anything that. So when you're expanding, everything must be turned into an array. All values must be turned into an array.
Yes.
When expanding, all values must be contained in an array JSON array structure. Okay, so when expanding, all values must be contained in a JSON array structure. When performing the expansion algorithm.
We just want to be sure that doesn't say that now when we get to, say, a value representation that is like at value, that all of the elements within there need to be in an array notation.
All right.
It's only
true
for object definitions that define entities.
But would that at value object be within an array?
Well, so you might imagine, let's say, if I wanted to say, A has a Mono's name is Mono, then that would be represented as an object with an ID that was Mono's URI identifier. There would be a value for a FOF name, say, that was expanded as an IRI, and then its value would be an array that contained an object which had at value Mono Sporny, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that value would not be in an array form itself.
Yeah.
I guess we could say this does not apply to, we could just say this does not apply to the value keyword, right?
It wouldn't apply to the type keyword. It wouldn't apply to the language keyword either.
It would apply to the type keyword
level,
right? So I guess it doesn't apply to any item in an expanded object. Does that address the issue?
Well, we just don't have a name. If we had a name for the object representation of an entity, then we can say that it applies to values in that representation. And then we have object representations for things that aren't entities, such as a literal value, an ID value, things like that. And that's where it doesn't apply. I'm not trying to rat hole the discussion.
No.
I just want to be sure it's not subject to misinterpretation.
I agree with you. I'm trying to think of the language for that. Apply to.
I mean, we could just say it applies to entity, values within entity definitions.
I think what Nicholas put in the IRC channel is good. This does not apply to values for syntactic keys, such as value, language, ID, and type when used for a data type.
That's basically all at keywords except type.
Actually, it doesn't apply to values of elements that are for value definitions, right? Because that's the use of all of those things. Value language ID and type used as a data type are within value definitions, not within entity definitions. I guess that says the same thing, but
yeah,
it's almost like we're tiptoeing around not having a way to describe the two different uses of JSON objects.
Right.
ID doesn't apply to value objects.
Right. Yes.
So
that's
some
true.
Syntactic keys might... I can't come up with any more...
Yeah, perhaps this is the best.
Yeah, I think let's just try and be pretty specific about what we're doing and then...
Yeah.
Okay, so the proposal is when performing the expansion algorithm, all values must be contained in a JSON array structure. I guess we can say unless otherwise specified. When performing the expansion algorithm, all values must be contained in a JSON array structure. This does not apply to values for syntactic keys such as value, language ID, and type when used to specify a data type. All right, that's resolved. And we are out of time for today. We didn't get to the initial context discussion and the container list discussion, but I mean I think we're really starting to hit the corner cases here, which is good. I don't think we're making any really large changes yet. Nicholas, should we close?
I think actually we solved almost everything of the container list Kaizen already.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
let's see.
So maybe, I don't know.
Nicholas says one more proposal I think we might want to do. Right?
Shall I read it out so we...
yeah.
Why you... Yeah. The proposal would be, when compacting anything that is coerced to a set or a list container type, has its values put into an array in the compacted output, even if there is only one value.
But didn't we say that?
I don't know.
Wasn't that...
We said it for an... I think we said it
for the empty
list.
Yeah.
But we didn't say anything about...
We said, when compacting and expanding anything that is coerced to a set or a list container type that has... Oh, we said it has an empty array. Okay.
Yeah.
So singular as well.
Yeah.
All right.
I think the last time we discussed, we just want to do that for framing. But, yeah, now that we changed the behavior of expansion, we might also change that.
It seems to follow.
Yeah, I agree. Marcus and Nicholas.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's the proposal. All right. I think that's the call for today. We'll have another call next week. I'm going to start pushing for the work to be picked up at the W3C. That should take maybe a month. Do you guys feel like we might be done with most of these major issues in a month?
Yeah, I think there's now some spec writing necessary, and I need to spend some time on my implementation to get up to date.
Yeah, me too, implementation-wise.
Okay.
And, I would love to help out with the spec writing as much as I can, though, although my time is pretty messed.
Sure. Okay, and I don't think it's going to take that much work to get the spec up to speed. I mean, we've spent a very long time discussing this stuff, but we're talking about updates that are like 3 or 4 sentences each.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we just have a lot of history to go through to make sure we've covered everything.
Yep.
Do you think we should do another super session next week or in 2 weeks?
We could, if we wanted to get these just get these issues resolved and done. Would you guys be available for a super session next week?
Yeah, I would.
I'll take a look.
Yes. And also, is the time changing next week? The DST changeover? I think
it's the week after.
Okay.
I think I can do a super session next week. Okay. Oh, and by the way, I haven't looked into this more. I looked at it in December. The AlegroGraph people wrote a post. Here's a link about something I believe is more or less an internal experiment they did with their AlegroGraph implementation, where they implemented a MongoDB interface to their graph database so that they could use the graph as a JSON document store.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think there is a lot of... I haven't been able to spend time with it, otherwise I would have contacted them and pointed them in the direction of JSON-LD, because it seems to be some very good things that could happen if they looked at this.
I went through this myself because RDF.RB has a MongoDB adapter, and I considered using JSON-LD as a representation for objects within there. But I came across some research that showed that representing the documents as individual statements had much, much better performance aspect when doing queries, so I ended up rejecting that.
I think I've seen some of that, but that pertains to using MongoDB for a graph backend.
Yeah.
Whereas this is using the interface of MongoDB as the API interface for a graph database. I have not, unfortunately, had any time to continue on it, but when I worked on Gluon, I experimented a bit with using a similar thing as the JSON-LD context to access the real graph, underlying graph, but use the keys defined in such a context. And I, given time, I will do the same here. I think that that's related to how they actually do things when they expose it, but just to let you know that this is out there, and in case anyone comes across AlegroGraph, you might want to remember this article.
Cool. No, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a big, at least internally, we're thinking of using MongoDB as our graph store, the scale out. So, you know, I think we're far more interested in how you use JSON-LD with Mongo than we might be with AlegroGraph, just because it's been easier for our developers to work with JSON documents instead of having to rethink the way we work with data in a triple store. That's fine. Go ahead.
I mentioned this before. I have the graph database as the sort of, the optimization for creating JSON that I put into Elasticsearch. And the documents ending up in Elasticsearch are extremely denormalized data, with pieces of other relations pulled into them to create some pretty advanced filtering, three objects behind, sorting on their dates and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
Neat. Have you written about that at all anywhere? A blog post or anything?
Far too little, a bit in Swedish. I have a perpetual to-do to do a real, real thorough description of this approach.
Okay. Yeah, because I think it'd be very interesting to kind of see that. Whenever you get around to doing that.
Yeah, I will definitely.
Cool. Awesome. Well, then next week we'll have a super session, and we'll start at our normal time and go for 2 hours and try to knock out as many of these remaining issues as possible. All right, anything else?
Sounds good.
Great. Thanks for the discussion.
By the way, are we having an? Is there an RDF session this week?
No.
No.
We're basically going to cancel them until we absolutely need to join. Give people as much time to focus on implementations as possible.
Right.
All right.
The issue that came up, I think Yvonne raised it, which seems to be, you know, there is a bug in the algorithm, but the intent in the document is clear.
Right.
But
yeah, and that stuff is fairly normal for a candidate recommendation phase. So as long as our intent is clear through the minutes or through some discussion that we've had or mailing discussion, then there's no issue. We'll just fix it in the document.
Excellent. Great.
Yep.
Done with that. Everything's fine.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.